wbai.org. Visit that website, wbai.org, and you can find out how to make a contribution to this commercial-free enterprise. 99.5 FM, it's 1 p.m. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, WBAI, 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. You know, positively minded life, it's hard sometimes to remember how to be positive. You know, it's hard. Sometimes you wonder how in this difficult world you could keep your mind on some of the positive things. It's almost like you have to recall them. But memory itself, memory plays such a pervasive role in our daily lives that we often take it for granted until an incident of forgetting or distortion demands our attention. Now, many people, as they get older, they now fear Alzheimer's because there seems that memory is not as available as it was when you were younger. You know, there seems to be loss of brain cells or something, but people fear it. But memory is a very important issue, something that nature built in, and we want to understand why. Memory's errors, the errors of memory, the mistakes of memory, forgetting things or distorting things, they've long fascinated scientists, and during the past decade, they've come to occupy a prominent place in our society. Forgotten encounters, misplaced eyeglasses, failures to recall the name of a familiar face, they become a common occurrence for many adults who are busily trying to juggle the demands of work and family. And it's hard to cope with all the bewildering array of new communication technologies. How many passwords can you remember? Right? How many pins do you have to be able to keep in your mind? I keep a list of them now, you know, hidden, but I forget where I put them. In addition to dealing with the frustration of memory failures in daily life, one concept is, well, life just got more complicated. And since there is more information, there is more to remember, and it's harder to remember. When life was simpler, wasn't it easier to remember things? If you wake up on your farm and you feed the chickens and you work in the field and you come home and you have a pot of stew and you go to sleep, that's it. You know, a black crow flew overhead. Now there's that, or there's what most of you do in your lives. Think about your life and think about how complex your life is and how flooded you are with information each day. Each day. Well, in addition to dealing with these frustrations, there's this terrible specter of Alzheimer's disease, you know, that looms on the horizon. And as the public becomes more and more aware of its horrors, the prospects of a life dominated by catastrophic forgetting, you know, further increases our preoccupation with memory. We have become almost phobic about losing our memory. It's like a sign of aging, you think? Maybe not. Now, though the magnitude of a woman's memory distortion in certain books, you know, kind of leads you to believe. Now, let's do the story of Benjamin Wilkomirski. You know Ben Wilkomirski? Do you remember him? Of course you don't. He wrote a Holocaust memoir, Fragments, he called it. It won worldwide acclaim for portraying life in a concentration camp from the perspective of a child. Wilkomirski, right, presented readers with raw, vivid recollections of the unspeakable terrors he witnessed as a young boy in the concentration camp. Even more remarkable, Wilkomirski had spent much of his adult life unaware of these traumatic childhood memories, only becoming aware of them in therapy. And in therapy, when he uncovered these memories, he wrote a book about it. So he became a sought-after international figure and a hero to Holocaust survivors. Then the story began to unravel. Dan Gansfield, a Swiss journalist and himself the son of a Holocaust survivor, published a stunning article in a Zurich newspaper. Gansfield revealed that Wilkomirski is actually Bruno Dussiker. And Bruno Dussiker was a Swiss native born in 1941 to a young woman who later gave him up for an adoption in an orphanage. And his foster parents, the Dossigers, found him there. Young Bruno spent all of his war years in the safe confines of his native Switzerland. He was never in a concentration camp. Now, whatever the basis of his traumatic memories of Nazi horrors, they did not come from childhood experience in a concentration camp. Yet, was Dussiker Wilkomirski a liar? Well, he took a truth test, and it was true. His story was true, according to his belief. He still strongly believes his recollections are real. Now, that throws us into a real funny thing. Hey, wait a minute, I remember it so vividly. I could give you such detail. I could write a book about it. And I could even pass a lie detector test. How could that be? Okay. Memories errors. The errors of memory are as fascinating as they are important. They can be divided into seven fundamental transgressions, which I'll call transience, absent-mindedness, blocking, misattribution, suggestibility, bias, and prejudice. These are all the seven different ways that our memory fails us. Just like the seven ancient deadly sins, you know, pride, anger, envy, greed, gluttony, lust, and sloth. The memory sins occur frequently in everyday life, and they can have serious consequences. So let's go over them. The first memory mistake that we make is transience. Now, transience refers to a weakening or a loss of memory over time. It is a basic feature of memory and the culprit in many memory problems. The longer you live, the harder it is to remember something that took place a long time ago. It's the nature of the brain structure. It doesn't mean that anything is wrong. But the brain, in order to make room for things, it seems, has a capacity for transient memory. So if you took a course, as I did when I was a kid, I took a course in matrix algebra. I took it once and I never used it again after that. I don't remember a thing about it. Not a thing. Because it was transient. How many courses did you take in school that you've forgotten completely? You know, what are those facts that you learned or those words that you had to memorize for the exams? You know what I mean? What about all those things? Transience is one of those survival mechanisms that helps our brains stay not too clouded. Now, transience is a sin of omission. We fail to bring to mind a fact. It's omitted. See, it's not in our mind. Absent-mindedness is the second of these sins of omission. Absent-mindedness involves a breakdown of the interface between attention and memory. Absent-mindedness, memory errors, is misplacing your keys, your eyeglasses, forgetting a lunch appointment, typically occur because we're preoccupied with distracting issues or concerns and don't focus our attention on what we need to remember. So these absent-minded things, you know, which is I forgot my keys, I didn't have that, I wasn't there, it means you're not paying attention because you're too busy. Okay, the mind does that. A third one of these omissions is blocking. Now, blocking is a real important thing to understand about memory. Blocking entails a thwarted search for information we may be desperately trying to retrieve. We've all had the experience of failing to produce a name to a familiar face. The frustrating experience happens even though we're attending carefully to the task at hand. And even though the desired name has not faded from our minds, as we became acutely aware when we unexpectedly retrieved the block name hours or days later, when it comes back, we say, oh, yes, that's the name. When you try to figure it out and try to figure it out and you can't get it, or you use the alphabet method like I do. All right, let's start off with everything I can remember that starts with A, B, C, D, and it always seems to work for me. The next, now, so this is sins of omission, meaning omission memory problems, and you get it, transience, absent-mindedness, and blocking. Now, blocking is also important because we may consciously block things. There are memories that we may consciously block, so much so that you can become placophobic. You know, placophobia. Don't you know what placophobia is? Sometimes a memory is associated with a symbol. And when the memory is associated with a symbol, you can become phobic. You become afraid of the symbol because it triggers a memory. You understand? So phobias very often are symbols that are attached. You could be afraid of cockroaches because cockroaches remind you of poverty, and they remind you of horror movies or mice or rats or things like that. You can have fears about these things because of the association with some terrifying experience as a child. Placophobia is fear of tombstones. There are people who are, whenever they see a tombstone, they're terrified. People learn ways of dealing with this. You know, children have ways. They're told when they get afraid of tombstones, they tell how to walk through a cemetery, you know, pick up your feet a certain way, do a certain thing. We have ways of dealing with these things. Placophobia. I have to do a program just about placophobia, but what about plutophobia, Hayden? You think that's fear of a dog? You think it's fear of Walt Disney? You think it's fear of a planet? What do you think plutophobia is? Believe it or not, it's a phobic reaction to wealth. Whenever you see wealth or sense wealth, you have a phobic reaction. You have a terrified reaction inside. Why is that? Because there's an association of wealth with something terrifying in your life. A memory. So, going back, these are the sins of, you know, we talk about the kind of memory thing that goes on. Transience, right, is when you forget something because it kind of, you lost it over time. Absent-mindedness is because you're too busy. And blocking, because there's an association that you don't particularly want to have, so you don't remember the thing. Or blocking, for some reason, we'll get to how that works. The next four ways, problems of memory, there are seven. The next four are misattribution, suggestibility, bias, and persistence. And I'll talk about these now. These are all acts of commission. See, these are commission rather than omission. There is some truth to it, but it's got a distortion in some way. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're talking about memory and the tricks of memory. Part of psychology. I mean, you know, you take psychology 101, one of the first things they teach you about is memory. But they never really give you the interesting stuff. They kind of tell you how it works. But, you know, your own memory is a very funny thing, and it's really a great place for you to learn about yourself. Misattribution. Misattribution involves assigning a memory to a wrong source, mistaking fantasy for reality, or incorrectly remembering that a friend told you a bit of trivia that you actually read about in a newspaper. Misattribution. Get that. you misattribute. So somebody says to you, where'd you learn about that? Oh, a friend told me. But it turned out you saw it on television. Were you lying? Or how did that work in your brain? Misattribution. It's one of the tricks of memory. Suggestibility. Well, you know, misattribution, just keep in mind, misattribution is one of the forms of memory that get really presented in the law, in the courts. In the courts, the thing that is almost always challenged is misattribution. When a person says something and they report a fact, if the lawyer challenges it and they challenge a person on memory, they can almost always nail them on misattribution. Where did you learn about that? Where did you hear about that? You know, if you're interviewing a policeman about something that he, you say you're challenging a policeman for an accusation of a criminal, and you have that policeman on trial, one of the ways that the defense attorney always go after the policeman is they ask him about facts. And he has a little book that he carries where he writes down the facts. But if you could find one mistake in the attribution of his facts, like he said, well, one of my fellow policemen told me. And it turns out that a policeman didn't tell him. It turns out he remembered it wrong. You can win a great deal in court because of that. Let's talk about suggestibility. Suggestibility refers to memories that are implanted as a result of leading questions, comments, or suggestions when a person is trying to call up a past experience. Suggestibility, it's very simple. I'm leading you there. A lot of therapists try to make their money on things called past life regression. You know? Ah, you're going backwards in time now. Can you smell the Yukon? Yes. And you go back, yes, I remember myself in the Yukon. Is it cold? Yes, it's shivering. I must have been in Alaska. Are you an Eskimo? No, I'm a penguin. Okay, what kind of penguin are you? And you're reliving your past life as an old penguin. That's why you like tuxedos. You know, you could lead anybody there. Suggestibility. Certain people are more suggestible than other people. You want to know who's more suggestible? I test for suggestibility because I used to do hypnosis. I was trained in hypnosis, and I do hypnosis rarely, but when I do it, you could always find out if a person can is suggestible to hypnosis by asking them to roll their eyes to the top of their head and then close your eyelids halfway. Can you keep looking up with your eyes, and can you close your eyelids halfway? Try to do it. Go ahead and try to do it. Try it now. Roll your eyes all the way up, right? And then lower your eyelids halfway so that your kind of eyes are flickering. If your eyes are flickering and your eyeballs disappear behind your eyes looking up, you are suggestible. If your eyes don't flicker, you're not suggestible. So that means that you're not a good hypnotic subject. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about memory. Suggestibility. Suggestibility is when something is implanted in your mind and you remember it one way as opposed to another. But like misattribution, suggestibility is specifically relevant to and can wreak havoc on the legal system because just the way a lawyer approaches you, you know, it's suggestible memory. Now comes the other one that affects your memory called bias. Bias. Bias reflects the powerful influence of our current knowledge and beliefs on how we remember our past. We often edit or entirely rewrite our previous experience. You can do that. Unknowingly, unconsciously, in light of what we now know or believe, the result can be a skewed rendering of a specific incident or even an extended period of our lives that says more about how we feel now than about what happened then. You can skip your past relationship. Tell me about your last relationship. Oh, and then you can make up anything you want. You skew it. Because back then you may have felt one way, but now you may feel differently. So you reshape your memory according to your current value system and belief system. That's called bias. So a biased memory is where you change your memory based on your current beliefs and feelings. And the last one is persistence. Persistence entails repeated recall of disturbing information or events that we would prefer to banish from our minds. This is another one of the problems of memory. The song that won't go away. The thing that won't leave your mind. The conversation you had that you keeps you up at night. You know, persistence. Why does your poor mind do it to you? Why can't you just say to your mind, like you'd say to your electric light, shut off the switch? I want to go to sleep. We cannot forget it. Everyone is familiar with persistence to some degree. Recall of a painful blunder on a job or a disappointing result on an important exam. In more extreme cases, serious depression or traumatic experience, persistence can be disabling and even life-threatening. Because the persistence of the thought and the memory becomes obsessive, and you just can't get it out of your mind, and you can't function. So why do we have these things? Why do we have them? This is the question. Why do we have these seven different ways of distorting our memory? What would nature have meant? What did Mother Nature, during our course of evolution, is memory flawed in a way that puts us at unnecessary risk because kind of Mother Nature said, I want to do away with the human race, so I'm going to give them screwed up memories so that they won't survive? Because wouldn't it be nice if your memory just worked the way it should work? Without distortions? I don't think so. To the contrary, I contend that each of the 7-1 of these distortions is a byproduct of an otherwise desirable and adaptive feature of the human mind. Okay, let's go to the two most common of these, transience and absent-mindedness. I'm going to take you back to the O.J. Simpson trial. All right? The conclusion of the most publicized trial in history, a jury acquitted O.J. Simpson of murder. Word of the verdict spread real quickly. Do you remember? Do you remember hearing about it? Nearly everybody reacted with either outrage or jubilation, and many people could talk about little else for days or weeks afterwards. The O.J. Simpson verdict seemed to be just that sort of momentous event that most of us would always remember vividly, how we reacted to it and where we were when we heard the news. Think about it. Can you remember how you reacted to hearing the verdict and where you were? Now, can you recall how you found out that O.J. Simpson was acquitted? Chances are that you don't remember, or that what you remember is wrong. How did you find out about it? Who told you? Where did you read it? Where did you hear it? A group of California undergraduates provided researchers with detailed accounts of how they learned about the jury's decision. When the researchers probed students' memories after 15 months, it was only 15 months later, only half recalled accurately, and the other half recalled inaccurately how they heard about it. What would that happen? The culprit in this incident is this sin of transience, this thing about transient memories. Forgetting that occurs with the passage of time, research has shown that minutes, hours, or days after an experience, memory preserves a relative detailed record, allowing us to reproduce the past with reasonable, if not perfect, accuracy. But with the passing of time, the particulars, the incidents, the details begin to fade, and it blurs our recollection. And it's an important thing, because if you had to remember everything, you really wouldn't seem to have enough room in your mind. So our brain seems to protect us in some way by having us filter out the detail and leave some detail behind. Change it. Absent-mindedness. On a brutally cold day in February 1999, 17 people gathered in the 19th floor office of a Manhattan skyscraper to compete for a title known to very few people. It was called the National Memory Championship. You don't remember this. They should have this in the Olympics. How about a memory championship, right? You could develop so many things. Why not a brain that remembers? The winner of the U.S. competition would go on to challenge for the World Memory Competition, which took place in London. The participants were asked to memorize thousands of numbers and words, pages of faces and names, lengthy poems, and decks of cards. The victor in the Battle of Pneumatic Virtuosos, a 27-year-old administrative assistant named Tatiana Cooley, relied on classic encoding techniques, generating visual images, stories, and associations, given a proven ability to commit vast amounts of information to memory. How did she do it? And when you asked her about it, she said, "I'm incredibly absent-minded. I make great mistakes. I forget my keys all the time." Cooley told a reporter that she's fearful that she might not even carry out everyday tasks. She said, "The only way I could remember what to do day to day is the one who won the memory competition." She said, "I need Post-its." She has to use Post-its. The image of a national memory champion dependent on Post-its in her everyday life has this kind of paradoxical, almost surreal quality. What a funny thing. What a funny thing your mind does. You could have a mind that remembers things, and then you could have a mind that is absent-minded. You could have a mind that does not do one thing, you know, which is wipe out the memory that, you know, over time. And then you could have a mind that just becomes absent-minded. It doesn't mean one or the other. Isn't this fascinating? Now, what's really fascinating about it is how your mind remembers things and what the associations are. And if you think about even music, do you remember music from childhood? Do you remember? How do you remember it? Do you remember it really well? Well, I'm going to challenge your mind with some music today. I want to challenge your mind to kind of take you back on a musical tour. And when I bring you back over time, I'm going to just take you to this one particular spot, and I'll say the following to you. Your memory of this, which I will play for you, is going to be distorted. It's going to be distorted. And your reaction is going to be distorted because there's a lot of reasons for it to be distorted. You will have felt one way about this music at one time of your life and another way about it at another time and a different way about it now. And how could that be? Because if you think about it, my friends, your music that you love now is not the music you loved then necessarily, because of associations, because of connections, because of things that happened. So we're going to continue with our discussion of memory. We'll even take some of your calls connected to this. But right now, I'm going to prepare you for a musical tour, which we'll do after our when we get back from our break. So just one final thing about this transience versus absent-mindedness. Transience is when you lose things over time. A man tees up a golf ball, hits it straight down the fairway. After waiting a few minutes for his partner to hit, the man tees up his ball again, having forgotten that he hit the first drive. A man puts his glasses down on the edge of a couch. 7 minutes later, he realizes he can't find his glasses. He spends a half hour searching for his home before locating them. Absent-mindedness. A man temporarily places a violin on the top of his car, forgetting that he's done so. He drives off with the violin still perched on the roof. Now, all of these seem to appear a similar kind of rapid forgetting. It's like each occurred for different reasons. Each one of these could be an idea of something that takes place that is part of an absent-mindedness, but not necessarily something that is a reflection of lost memory. How complex could it be? It happens to all of us. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back from our break, I'll be playing you some music, but I want you to see and recall with your mind what it does to you, and don't block it out. Just recall. See what your experience is. I'll be back with you in just a couple of moments.
Hey, this is Smokey Robinson, and you're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM, New York.
Let the music take your mind. TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
Here we go.
Hey, listen, Michael Jackson, huh? Remember the time? Big deal. Now, what's so interesting about that is that at one point, in fact, I think we should take your calls on this one because this will show you exactly what I mean by the distortions of memory. Our telephone number is 212-209-2900. It's 212-209-2900. Here's the thing I'm going to ask you. When you heard it, and you heard Michael Jackson and the memory flash back, now remember, there was a period of time here when Michael Jackson was just the cat's meow for many people. Some people did not like him that much. But it was hard to deny his genius. It was very hard to deny. Some people say, it's not my kind of thing. I prefer Mozart. You know, maybe, okay. Hard to dance to, but you could. That could be a preference. Other people had Michael Jackson and in their minds, and then they had associations that followed around the time of the trials. And then suddenly he became something else. And your mind, in some way, may have changed retroactively going back to seeing what you felt. You know, people I know nowadays, I mean, on WBAI, I can't even imagine how many times they play Michael Jackson anymore. Old Michael Jackson, you could play old Elvis Presley, you could play old anything. But because of that, some of that political stuff that came up and the ethical stuff that came up and moral stuff that came up, some people are even afraid to play the music. Reluctant, I will say, at least. But they will play hip-hop music that, you know, will do much bigger stuff, you know. But it's just, so what's your reaction? This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're talking about memories, and we're talking about the way we distort memories. And we went over the 7 different ways that we distort memories, in case you just tuned in. And we're talking about this particular memory, 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hey, Armand?
Yes.
How you doing?
Good.
It's funny that you mentioned, it's funny that you played that song, because yesterday I had on Michael Jackson in my vehicle, and I do skip past that song. Back in the day, I'll let you know, I'm a 38-year-old black man. And back during that song, I was dating a white woman, and it was our favorite song. And it's weird that now, when that song comes on my iPod, I go right past it.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I mean, because I just heard you say that, and I'm like, that's funny. That's exactly what I do.
And you go past it without even thinking about why you go past it.
I don't even think. Well, I mean, as soon as I hear the song, she immediately pops in my head. And I do just go past the song, and then I just forget all about it.
Do you like, do you listen to other Michael Jackson music?
Oh, yeah, I was listening to almost every song on the album yesterday.
Okay, which album was that of his? Do you remember?
Well, actually, it's just a bunch of tracks that I actually have on my iPod. It's, if I'm not mistaken, it was from The Dangerous.
Yeah, and which one is your favorite? I mean, which is one that you could put on and it's completely untainted?
Well, it's not from that same CD, but it's So You Want to Be Starting Something.
When you hear,
I love that song.
So You Want to Be Starting Something, right? It just touches you, right?
Absolutely.
Why?
I don't know why. I like the rhythm of the song. I like the up tempo. I guess it. To be honest with you, it does. It will put me in a better mood. It does tend to put me in a better mood.
And it puts you in a better mood. So, what are your associations to it?
You know, I really don't have any associations to that particular song, other than I just like it.
Yeah, I hear you.
I mean, I wanted to talk to you about the other song because it was just funny that you played it, and then, you know, immediately it just brought back certain memories because it's some of the themes in the song. Remember the time? Like, we stayed up on the phone all night. We used to do that, and it was our favorite song. So I just said, let me try to get in, because I listen to you often. I just started listening to BAI about a year ago, and then I caught you one afternoon, and I found some of the topics very interesting. So whenever I catch you on, I tend to listen because I'm driving around in my van all day, so I get to listen to a lot of hours of BAI. And yeah, I love your program. I think it's great. Now, I just wanted to give you a call one day.
Good. And now that you got on the air, tell me about your past relationship. Do you still, what's your name, by the way?
My name is Aaron.
Aaron, tell me about that past relationship. Was it very, very painful, the ending of it?
To be honest with you, it was probably the last painful relationship, the ending of it that I had.
And what made
I got it. I will admit that I dealt with it for a couple of years.
And what was so painful about it?
It kind of seemed like it ended abruptly.
Yeah.
You know, I guess, you know, people always say this thing with closure and stuff. I never, you know, get into that. But it kind of ended all of a sudden, out of nowhere. It kind of surprised me.
Can you tell me how it ended?
What it was. I'm sorry?
Tell me how it ended.
I don't remember too much, but I know the day before it ended, we were, I don't know, arguing a little bit, and then I ended up going over there to our home, and we had a little conversation, and I kind of, you know, I remember I was younger then. I was about 22 years of age, and I kind of used to throw out things like, you know what, okay, if that's the case, then we shouldn't see each other anymore. And I know I didn't really mean it, but she was like, okay.
Well,
and I was like, okay. And then I'm like, I kind of left, and I came back. I'm like, wait a minute. You know, you were actually breaking up with me, aren't you? And I got to admit, at that time, I didn't take it too well.
Sure.
After I really understood what was happening, no, I didn't take it too well at all.
Yeah, very big pains associated with it.
Yeah, so I mean, it's been a number of years, and it's funny. You know, so when I think about that song, I do go back to that time, and I do remember that time very well. I mean, besides the ending of it, it was a fun time of my life. I was young, a lot of things were going on, and it was just, it brings back a lot of good memories.
Well, I thank you so much for calling in.
I appreciate it, Armand.
Let me know if this has any meaning to you.
Oh, absolutely.
(212) 209-2900 This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. We're talking about your memories and how your memories are affected. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Well, I know.
How are you?
There we are. Hi there. Hello.
Hi, Armand. It's Tony from the Walter Reed Theater. How are you?
Hey, Tony. Good. How are you, Tony?
I'm having a beautiful day in New Jersey. I'm in the sun, and I thought I'd call because I remember this, the melody of the song. I remember the sounds he made at the end. What he did it much
better.
Yeah, and how much I like that sound he made from the time it was gone. It was about around 1984.
Uh-huh. And Tony, so your association with it is completely okay?
Yes. I could remember a little bit about the time I was in. I was going to college at the time, and it was a good time in my life. But, yeah, and I wanted to listen to this guy. I wasn't big on Michael Jackson, but I wanted to listen to what he had to say, and I'd hear, especially the guttural, the sound that he made, the beat, the melody. And, of course, it's easy to remember the lyrics.
Great.
All these years later.
Nice to talk to you again, Tony. Thank you for calling
you,
in.
Bye-bye. Okay.
Right. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. You know, there's a thing called a synesthete. Synesthete is a fascinating kind of thing. There are people in this world who feel more things than other people do. Not just emotionally, but they have physical things they feel. They have different senses. And it turns that if your memory is connected to more than one sense, it performs a deeper pathway. So that's one concept of memory, which is the more feelings you have with a given memory, the more, if it's more positive feelings. But then they learn something else. We have a hormone called oxytocin. Oxytocin is a very interesting thing. It's like a hormone that was originally, we thought of it only necessary for breastfeeding. That this hormone plays an important role in social bonding and maternal behaviors. In biological psychiatry, they show that oxytocin itself, now just to let you know, you've all heard of OxyContin and OxyContin abuse as a drug that people take. Right, and Percodan is part of that oxytocin group and OxyContin. that oxytocin is something that makes you feel real good, and it kind of works in a certain way. So does OxyContin, the drug, which is why it becomes so addictive. Now, they sought to find out what is the effect of this oxytocin on memory. And they found that when people feel a lot of oxytocin, which is what happens when you feel bonded, it tends to provoke a deeper positive memory. So there may be no memory like finding things that facilitate oxytocin, and that could be tenderness, It could be the memory of somebody who was in your family. It's like, you know, if you have somebody who died, how easily you can call them up if you love them, and how you could bring them present at any given moment. How you might even see them in somebody else you know, because of the oxytocin and the bonding. And they talk about social isolation, is that in social isolation, there are people who are socially isolated seem to have a decrease in oxytocin. Kind of interesting, right? You don't have that binding. 212-209-2900. We're talking about memories and memory associations. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. I want you to know I'm John, by the way, John McLaughlin.
Hello, John.
From Levittown, New York. I've listened to you for years, and I love your show. And moving on the subject of memory, you know, you really triggered a lot of things. You know, when I talk to my mom, she's 85 years old, and, you know, granted, you know, there's age there, and she'll say to me often, you only remember the bad things, and I remember the good things. And I said, Mom, I'm not remembering the bad things, I'm just remembering what I remember. And I can remember my I'm 59, and I can remember my kindergarten teacher, Miss Dawn, and what she played on her piano. And, you know, my mother always fights that. She says, that didn't happen. You don't remember that. But that may be indigenous to my mother's.
It may be to hers, but let's look at it. Let's look at the oxytocin bonding. Oxytocin bonding, you know. Mm-hmm. Tell me about this teacher you had. What was her name?
Oh, Miss Dawn. She had bangs. She had hair like, you know, Sonny and Cher, you know, like Cher's hair.
Yeah, sure.
And she was a wonderful.
Wonderful. Woman.
And I used to remember bringing home clay turtles and pictograms and all that, you know. And
how did she treat you?
Oh, she was wonderful, you know. But it's how my mother treated us, because she used to say, okay, just put the paintings away. And she doesn't remember me telling her that, you know.
Well, you see, now, of course, trying to remind your mom
is offensive, I know.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Trying to remember if you remember your mother and you remember her really well, and you remember the way she was, then what you do is you have this one contrast. Your mom was not very oxytonating. You know, she wasn't kind of bonding to you in a way that felt loving and kind. She probably had a lot of stuff on her plate.
You're right.
She was probably depressed, and she
amen.
She was probably not, you know, depressed people don't have much oxytocin to put out there.
Oh boy.
So there she was, not unable to do that. And what happens to you? You go and you meet this lady who oxytocinates you. You know, she makes nice to you. She's nice to you. She's kind to you. She's a complete opposite. And then in addition to that, you not only bond with her, but when you go home with your mother adds to the memory by adding a little grief to it as well. So the thing becomes deep.
You're absolutely right.
You know, so of course
that's
you
profound.
Have this vivid
that's
memory.
That's profound, Armand. That is profound.
Now, your mom can't afford to remember it. You know why? Because your mom realizes that she never could give you what you needed in love. So she must deny the existence of Miss Dawn. She must deny that this thing took place.
Oh, boy.
And that's just where she's stuck right now.
Oh, boy. I thank you so much. Can you tie one thing in with what you've said?
Sure.
I've listened to everything you've said. Dreams, are they somehow connected to the memory? Because I remember things as they happened, and in my dreams. I dream every night, and I'm not on medication, you know, and they're so prolific, you know. I think, wow, wish I could go back there again, you know.
Well, you see, there's reverie. Now, reverie and memories of things in the past, it's kind of interesting. There's a, how old are you, did you say?
59.
59. You know, there's a replay of Hair, the
I saw it.
You did?
Yeah.
What was it like?
I'm a 60s child, so I went to everything there. And it was an eye-opener. I enjoyed it so much, you know.
And when you looked around you and you saw the people there and you saw the silver hair you know, and you saw them and the way they were enjoying it. Did you see the look of bliss on so many faces?
Yes, I did. And I saw also the look of shock, but, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, every generation has to acclimate themselves or not to the previous generation, you know.
So the idea was that what I'm saying to you about your memories and your dreams is that there are associations that people have with times in their life when they felt better than they do now. Mm-hmm. I remember the time, you know, when I was dancing in the streets. I remember the time when I was not so burdened with problems. I remember the time. Goes back to our song. So your dreams are kind of calling up a better you. And in a way, it does function very well for you because it gives you kind of the muscle to go through, remembering that no matter how old you get, you're always going to carry that muscle with you, and you're still good, capable of dancing.
I'm sure you would bop them like crazy. That was so profound.
Yeah.
I was a school teacher for 30 years. I'm retired now. I taught high school English, 12th grade. And my dear friend in New York City, he's my mentor, he says, you will always remember in your dreams the kids you taught because they're frozen in time. And I can deal with that, you know. But I can't deal with my mother who changes memories.
Well, you see, you've got this problem. You're a caretaker to somebody. She doesn't change memories. You got your caretaker to somebody who's miserable.
Oh, jeez.
And when you're a caretaker to somebody, I got a guy who works with me who specializes. The thing he specializes in is helping people who are caretakers because of this very thing. And he's become a guy that more and more people are consulting with. And because he's because more and more people are becoming caretakers to the elderly, and it's very difficult. It's a very difficult thing.
God bless him.
Yeah, he does.
And you know, I'm a baby boomer, so it's not easy sorting things out. But you answered my questions, and I don't want to deprive somebody else from calling you.
Sure. Thanks for calling in.
And thank you, Armand. I've listened to you for so long now. And I appreciate your help, you know, and I really do. And I go forward, go on. Carpe diem.
Thanks for calling in. 212-209. Yes, bye-bye. It's so nice to hear from people, huh? 212-209-2900. Time for one more call that we could get in here. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand?
Yes.
How are you? I have a question for you. It has nothing to do with the memory, what you're talking about.
Oh.
It's similar to what you was talking about, I believe it was yesterday. And what I wanted to ask you, then maybe you can help me out with, is that I have a girlfriend, and she has a son, and her son looks up to me tremendously a lot more than the father. Now, the father's not really, really in his life like that, but every now and then he pops in and pops out. And she wants it to be known that the father, he has a father, but at the same time, she wants me to help out in terms of raising him. And she also has an older son that's about 20, 21 years old. And like, just like, for example, let's say, for example, I used to box, and she talks about how good the son is when it comes to boxing or fighting.
Okay, now listen, I'm running out of time. The question is, are you feeling sometimes that you just don't want to be in this position?
Thank you. Well, it's not so much that I don't want to be in it. She makes me feel that I want you to help me, but the credit, I'm not giving homage or giving homage to you. I see the homage somewhere else. But I want you. But I know that you are a good candidate, and you can make it happen in terms of raising them up.
Yeah, I hear.
And that's the issue with me. So it's like.
Well, have you communicated that to her directly?
Yes, I did, and I was able to see. You know how sometimes people say the answer is C, but they say the answer is C, but they put down on the paper B, so you kind of like get the idea of...
Listen, I'm going to have to go because we're really out of time. Send me an email, okay? And let me try to see if I could help you with that. It's Armand, Armand, @brainlink.com. This is Armand DeMille. Unfortunately, we are completely out of time. I hate to cut you short. You're listening to John Coltrane play So Easy to Remember. Very appropriate. And go to the website, thepositivemind.com, or go to WBAI.org for replays of today's program. I will be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. My love to you all.